So we're talking with David Hawkings from Congressional Quarterly, Roll Call. He's the author of Hawkings Here, blog and columns. What is that? HawkingsHere.com? How do we get that?
Gosh. Well, you can first. You should follow me at David Hawkings. That's my pitch on Twitter.
Oh yeah, Twitter.
And you can just go to RollCall.com and snoop around. It's a great site. A lot of good insider stuff about Congress and the transition and the power structure for next year. And there's a button right at the top to read my stuff.
Now, my sense of the House of Representatives is that while people like to think of it as the people's house, it's really quite a dictatorship. The Speaker rules. And now there was some sense, you know, that there might be some changes in leadership on both sides, Democratic and Republican, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. Could you talk about that?
Well, it's definitely not going to happen on the House Republican side. And yes, right up until the afternoon of Election Day, it seemed as though Paul Ryan, the guy who's the Wisconsin congressman who's been Speaker for just a year, that he would face another challenge to his leadership, or a challenge to his leadership from the so-called Freedom Caucus. These are the 40 or so of the most combustibly, combatively conservative members of Congress. But with Donald Trump's election and the Donald Trump's signal that he wanted Ryan's collaboration despite their rocky relationship, which was a signal that was made in part by their quite friendly meeting at the Capitol a couple of days after the election, by the appointment of Reince Priebus, the chairman of the Republican Party, as White House chief of staff, albeit in this complicated relationship with Steve Bannon, which we might want to talk about later. But Reince Priebus, White House chief of staff, a truly close friend of Speaker Ryan's. They're of the same age. They're from the same state. They're even from the same part of the same state. They know each other very well, true friends. And so this was a signal to everybody that Trump wants Ryan to help drive his agenda. And so the Freedom Caucus has been boxed out, essentially. They've been sort of marginalized here. And so Paul Ryan and his entire leadership team have walked into another term running the House, which is only, we should stop to note, only a narrowly smaller majority than it currently is and has been for the last 2 years. The House Republicans ended up only losing 6 seats. So a way better than expected performance by the House Republicans. In the end, only a handful of incumbents were defeated. In the end, overall, for those who were looking for evidence that this was not a change election, 98% of members of the House who ran for re-election won again, including all the ones where we're speaking from, all the ones in New England who were seemingly dangerous and in upstate New York in danger of losing. They virtually all won. So Ryan gets to live another day. Not so in the Democratic side. On the Democratic side, Nancy Pelosi, who has been at the top of the ladder for the House Democrats for more than a dozen years now, is facing a stronger than usual grumbling that it is time for her to move on and allow a younger generation of people to move up, and maybe a generation or a type of leader who does not sort of symbolize what for many is the new Democratic Party. The Democratic Party has gone from the party of the working man to the party of the Starbucks cafe, silk scarf wearing San Francisco type, which is exactly what Nancy Pelosi embodies.
But the reports I've been reading say that there's just one lonely guy who says he wants to, and an unknown, basically, who says he wants to run against her. So she really, from where I'm sitting, doesn't look like there's much opposition.
You know, I think as we speak, there doesn't seem like there's much opposition. And yes, you say the only guy who's even talking about running against her, and he has not officially thrown his hat, so-called, in the ring, congressman from Ohio, his name is Tim Ryan, not to be confused with Paul Ryan. Tim Ryan, they're not related ideologically or in any other way. Tim Ryan represents Youngstown, Ohio. He represents exactly the type of part of the country where that embodies the Democrats' challenge. You know, it's working class, union, former manufacturing, hard economic hard time place that was, I'm going to venture to guess, that district voted for Obama in both of his elections and voted for Trump last week. So this guy, Tim Ryan, embodies that. Whether he can actually mount a campaign that knocks off Pelosi, who has enormous goodwill and strength of will and fundraising prowess and knows where all the bodies are buried and is kind of a very strong leader, don't know. The election won't be until after Thanksgiving, and in a group of just 190 or so people, the dynamic can shift fast. So I would say stay tuned.
All I know is that on this program, the Congressional Corner, I talk to congressmen all the time and congresspeople all the time, and the love for Nancy Pelosi seems to be extraordinary, the gratitude and the love for her, but not so much with the American people. What do you make of that?
Not so much with the American people, and I think that you are right that the, you know, if I'm right in assuming that most of the congressional guests you have are from the Northeast,
yes.
From New England. You know, I mean, that's her base. I mean, her base is the deep blue part of America, the Northeast and the West Coast. Those members are very loyal to her. There are members who are from the middle of the country, the Midwest, the few that are from the South, that worry that she just is not the face of the party, should not, after 12 years, despite her loyal service and, you know, her great work raising the money and organizing campaigns. You know, the Democrats have now lost whatever it's been, you know, every election for control of the House since 2010, and that generally means you change leaders at that point. So the public, I think, sees her as, I think Republicans sort of, they vilify her just as sort of a Ted Kennedy liberal and all that sure. bad stuff. But there are some Democrats who I've talked to from parts of the country that are not deep blue that think she's just a bad, that they need to have blue collar appeal to turn more districts blue, and she does not have much blue collar appeal.
Would Steny Hoyer, the number two guy, would he be more acceptable to the blue collar types?
Yes, he would. Steny Hoyer, who's from the Washington suburbs of Maryland, it's a great and complicated and operatic rivalry between Steny Hoyer and Nancy Pelosi that actually goes back to the early 1960s, when incredibly the two of them both interned together for the same senator from Maryland, and they've been rivals ever since. And there are some who say that Nancy Pelosi will never voluntarily get out of the way if she thinks there's any chance that Steny could step up and take the top job. That's a real thing. Yes, I think Steny Hoyer has more of that blue collar appeal, but there's also this generational thing.
How old did you say she is?
They're all in their 70s. Hoyer's in his 70s, and Mrs. Right. Pelosi's in her 70s. Jim Clyburn, who is a congressman from South Carolina, also in his 70s. I mean, their average age is like that of the Rolling Stones, and the Republican leadership's average age is, you know, like that of Boys to Men or something like that.
Well, the House is pretty much going to be rubber stamp for Trump, you think?
Well, I think I think they will be inclined to want to do what Trump wants to do. I mean, I think it's always the case that having a president of your party tends to unify even the most fractured caucus. I mean, there were a bunch of Democrats that didn't like Barack Obama's priorities, but he did enormously well in his first couple of years. That having been said, Donald Trump's ideology, to the extent we understand it, and I would describe Trump as the least ideological, the most pragmatic, least ideological president we've had in certainly my lifetime. To that extent, what we do know about what he wants to do does not dovetail with what most Republicans want to do. You know, the thing he mentioned on election night that he wanted to do first is a giant amount of spending on infrastructure. I mean, a classic sort of Democratic idea. Let's prime the pump of the economy by pouring lots of taxpayer dollars into roads, bridges, schools, hospitals, tunnels, mass transit, et cetera.
David Hawkins, we love having you on the program. And I've left the best for last. The next time, we'll come back and we'll talk about the Senate.